We're just two weeks away from Election Day. With many Wisconsinites already casting ballots, President Trump stopped in Janesville over the weekend to make his case.
This Election Day, the people of Wisconsin, and you know what? We win Wisconsin. We win the whole ball game. It's a... I mean, what the hell do you think I'm doing here on a freezing night with 45-degree winds? What do you think? I'm doing this for my health? I'm not doing this for my health.
Our next guest is here to break down what the polling, fundraising numbers, and more could tell us about the state of the race, what Wisconsin means in the campaign, and what issues are at the top of the list for voters. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the presidential race? Have you attended a campaign rally or virtual event? Are you undecided? What do you need to hear or learn to make your decision? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Susan Johnson is an associate professor of political science at UW-Whitewater. Susan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, President Trump talked about the importance of Wisconsin in the race. I don't think anybody's going to disagree with him too much, right? Wisconsin, it's going to be tough for either side to win the race without winning states like Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania.
Absolutely. And I think we all remember in 2016, in the aftermath of the 2016 election, the oft-repeated phrase, Hillary Clinton never came to Wisconsin. And I think rightly attribute part of the reason why she lost to the fact that she made assumptions, her campaign made assumptions about Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania, as you indicated. And this year, the Democrats are certainly not going to be accused of making that same mistake. And clearly neither is the Trump campaign.
I want to give a listen to former Vice President Joe Biden in another battleground state, North Carolina, over the weekend, talking to an audience in their cars. Here's a listen.
I'm running as a proud Democrat, but I will govern as an American president. No red states, no blue states, just the United States. I promise you, I'll work as hard for those who don't support me as those who did. That's the job of a president, a duty to care for everyone in America.
Can you talk, Susan, a little bit about campaigning and how it works a little differently in this pandemic year?
I think that what we're seeing is quite a different campaigning style between the Trump campaign and the Biden campaign. And you alluded to the fact that Vice President Biden was speaking to people in their cars, and his campaign has very much been one that has been very high on the social distancing. So not only have his events been something like drive-in events, but they've been much smaller events where he and Kamala Harris, the vice presidential running mate, and others have been meeting with much smaller groups of voters. The Trump campaign, on the other hand, has been running a more traditional campaign. The president has been holding rallies. Nothing to the size of the rallies he held in 2016 as a result of COVID-19 and his inability to hold rallies indoors for the most part. But he's been doing rallies like he did in Janesville this weekend all across the country, sometimes two in a day. And so on Saturday, he was in both Michigan and Wisconsin. And he gets a lot of energy from those rallies, and he's been really itching to get on the campaign trail and hold rallies. And so I think that he's really enjoying being out and about holding rallies. And, you know, unfortunately, Vice President Biden is someone who also likes personal interaction quite a bit. So I would think that it's been quite a struggle for him as a very people person to not be able to be out and about and speaking to voters in a way that he spent his whole career doing.
Talking to Susan Johnson, political scientist at UW-Whitewater, 2 weeks out from voting day. I guess every day is voting day lately, but from the big finish to the campaign. You can join in with your thoughts and questions on the presidential race at 800-642-1234. Susan, another point that I think both campaigns agree on, the Biden campaign saying don't trust the polls Biden could still lose. The Trump campaign saying don't trust the polls. Trump could still win. Doesn't seem like anybody wants people to take the polls seriously right now.
Yeah, it's interesting that very recently, over the weekend, in fact, the Biden campaign came out and said, don't believe the polls. And it was a call to make sure that his supporters are not getting complacent and making sure that the turnout operations are still going in full force, that people who might be planning on early voting or who have may perhaps received a ballot in the mail or something are going to make sure that they get those ballots turned in. And obviously, at the same time, you have the president's campaign team showing that he's trailing nationally and also in several key states. And it's not at all uncommon for the campaign that's down to also speak to not believing the polls. And I think that 2016 was a clear indication that you can't always believe what you see in the polls. And so I think that both campaigns are speaking truth when they say, you know, let's not pay attention to the polls. Let's just make sure we get our voters out.
Let's talk about the messages you're hearing from each campaign, starting with the incumbent President Trump. What are you hearing as he tries to close that apparent polling gap and close the deal here?
He's been trying to reinforce some of the key issues that have been central to his campaign. He's talking a lot about the economy and the economic recovery that he says is coming after the quick downturn that we saw as a result of the onslaught of COVID-19 in the spring. He's speaking about immigration. He's speaking a lot about issues related to law and order and different things to really rally his base of support.
And then the Biden campaign, what is their closing message looking like?
Their closing message seems to be the central theme seems to be that we are a much more responsible and responsive administration. And we are going to show you that in how we will take over the responsibility for managing the COVID-19 pandemic. Also speaking a lot about healthcare and also about the economy. And so in my mind, those three are all tied together, the economy, COVID, and healthcare. I think those are the three things that the Biden campaign has been really pushing hard on.
Now, on COVID-19, another message I guess the candidates seem to agree on, President Trump saying if elected, Joe Biden would listen to Dr. Anthony Fauci, and Joe Biden saying, if I'm elected, I'll listen to Dr. Anthony Fauci. Some people have been making a lot of the president's attacks on Fauci and other top health officials. I don't know, what message does that send?
As someone who watches a lot of politics, as obviously you can imagine, sometimes when I see candidates say something, I think, oh, that'll make a great ad. And when I heard President Trump say, and I'm going to paraphrase, but when I heard President Trump say, if Joe Biden's elected, he's going to listen to the scientists, he's going to listen to Fauci, I thought, well, boy, that's going to make a great Biden ad. And I think it's already been turned into a Biden ad. So I think that some of the people in the Trump camp as well are concerned about the blatant attacks against science and against Dr. Fauci as sort of the personification of science, I think, for the president and in many people's minds. And I think that there's many in the Trump campaign who don't see that necessarily as a way to bring in people who might still be undecided. And yet the president seems to be becoming more aggressive in that regard in his attack on Fauci and attack on the science behind the COVID-19 pandemic.
Susan Johnson is with us, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. She stays with us as we talk about the presidential campaign with in-person Election Day just 2 weeks away. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Has COVID-19 changed the way you think about this election? Have any TV or social media ads caught your attention? Have you donated to a presidential campaign? Are you hopeful that everything is going to go smoothly this time around? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with UW-Whitewater political scientist Susan Johnson, looking at the home stretch leading up to the end of voting. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you watching the polls this election season? Have you already voted? Call 800-642-1234. What issue is important to you? What questions do you have in the home stretch? Call 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Luke is with us in Gladstone, Michigan. Luke, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I just wanted to make a comment of what I've noticed is that an incumbent president is running his campaign messaging as if he's not the incumbent, as if he hasn't been the president for the last 4 years. And I'll take your comments off there. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Susan. Do you have thoughts on what he had to say there? He says the president running like the outsider candidate, I guess, in some ways.
I would tend to agree with Luke's comments in the sense that you have a situation where where President Trump is speaking a lot about this idea of, I mean, just think about his slogan, Make America Great Again, that he toyed with moving on from, but that seems to be what people are still speaking about. And he's also, you know, doing different things in terms of his rallies and the things he's putting forward that tend to, yeah, I would agree with Luke that he's not necessarily running as an incumbent on a record in the way that you would expect a president would.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Jack is with us in Elk Mound. Jack, hi.
Yeah, hi. Does your guest have a percent or number in mind of Wisconsin voters who are actually undecided at this point?
Thanks for the call. Susan, are you tracking the undecided polling, or do you have a good hunch?
In the last Marquette poll, I think the number was very small. In the low single digits or mid single digits. And that's been pretty consistent, I would say, nationally in terms of the polling and then across the different states. So we haven't seen percentages, I would say, in most states and nationally of undecideds being over 5% or so. I'm thinking that most people have made a decision one way or the other. And the issue now is less about swaying those few undecideds and more about making sure that you get your voters out to the polls, be that today or on election day or any time in between.
Yeah, thanks a lot for that call. What do you think about how much voting is happening ahead of election day? It's not, you know, a brand new thing, but it's on a different scale, I think it's fair to say, Susan, than we've seen before.
Yeah, and I was reading a bit about Wisconsin early voting, and there were people lined up in places like Milwaukee today on the first day of early voting, and we've seen long lines in Texas, in Georgia, in other places where they do a lot of in-person early voting, and the numbers are much higher than anything we've ever seen before. And depending on different states are reporting different things as far as whether it's more Democrats or Republicans. It's hard to tell in some states because if people don't have to identify their party at some point, then you don't know who the voters are going to be. The consensus seems to be that it's more Democrats who are pursuing the option to early vote, but I'm kind of holding back on that until we get more data before I say that across the board, it's Democrats in every state that are pushing this.
And for a couple reasons, in part related to early voting, we might not have those earlier calls on states on election night that we're used to. Those, are, of course, never the official count anyway, but with exit polling and things like that, we have a pretty good sense of who's going to win in most states. That's not something, if I understand correctly, Susan, that we're going to be able to count on this year.
Yes, and that's because we have 50 states and the District of Columbia, and that makes for 51 different ways that ballots are counted. And in some states, for example, when you vote early, clerks are able to start tabulating those votes immediately. And when election night happens, you press a button and you've got those results already to add to whatever is going on actually on election day. Wisconsin, for example, is not that way. So in Wisconsin, clerks can't start counting the ballots until election day. And so Wisconsin is one of those states where they think that we might not know who wins Wisconsin on election night, because if there's a whole lot of early and absentee voting going on, then those absentee ballots can't be counted. And they won't be counted until election day and after. And so we just might not know. And there are other states that are considered battleground states that are similar in that way. So I think that there's been a big push to educate people to this idea that we may not know on election night who actually wins, and we may not know for a day or week after.
Talking to Susan Johnson, political scientist at UW-Whitewater, about the home stretch in the presidential election campaign. Let's bring on another caller. Jeff is with us in Dubuque. Jeff, hi.
Yes, hi, Rob, and thank you for taking my call. Two questions. One is, can you give us a sense of the support for Mr. Trump among the religious right, the white evangelicals, whether that's remaining strong or weakening? And the second is, what impact has the criticism of Mr. Trump by some Republican senators, particularly the one in Nebraska, have on the electorate? And I'll listen to your answer on the radio.
Jeff, thanks a lot for calling in. So first, white evangelical voters or the religious right, Jeff says, do you see them supporting President Trump again this time around?
I haven't seen any significant drop in the support of white evangelicals for President Trump. I think that one of the reasons why they pushed so strongly on the Amy Coney Barrett nomination to the Supreme Court was to shore up the votes of religious conservatives. And what we wouldn't expect is that any of those white evangelicals, who tend to be quite conservative, to necessarily flip and vote for Joe Biden, because they would see him as being too liberal when you compare him to any Republican candidate. And so the issue becomes, will they come out in the strong numbers that they did in 2016 in support of President Trump, or will they decide to perhaps not participate?
And our caller also asked about criticism from Republicans. He referenced Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse. I think he was referring to, we see an endorsement by former Republican National Committee Chair Michael Steele today. Is that something, though, that you see swaying Trump voters?
I mean, people, I would say, tend to look to opinion leaders to help them maybe make decisions about who they're going to vote for. But I don't think that it's necessarily to the point where a senator from Nebraska would impact a voter in Wisconsin, let's say. But perhaps in Nebraska, there are people who are strong supporters of Ben Sasse who might say, well, I'm on the fence, and Ben Sasse isn't so thrilled with Donald Trump, and therefore maybe I'm not going to vote for Donald Trump as a result. But my question always becomes, who are you going to vote for as an alternative? Because Ben Sasse did not come out and endorse Joe Biden. He was trying to come out and separate himself from Donald Trump. And that's often what we're seeing when someone like Ben Sasse or others at this point are being critical of the president.
And we have, in theory, a debate on Thursday. We got a message from CJ in Madison who wonders if the recent Hunter Biden story will be brought up at this week's debate. CJ says, I'd like to hear each candidate address it. This has been an ongoing target, Hunter Biden, of Joe Biden's son's business dealings. The story in the New York Post got a lot of attention, some questions about its, I guess, provenance. Do you expect to see talk about this if the debate, in fact, happens?
If I were the Trump campaign, I would encourage President Trump to bring it up, because what we saw in the first debate was that when talk of the president's children came up, it bothered Vice President Biden, as one would expect that it would. And so, speaking strategically, I would think that the Trump campaign would want to bring attention to that, because there are still these lingering questions in regard to Hunter Biden. And it also might, you know, put Vice President Biden a bit on edge. And that would be beneficial from the perspective of the Trump campaign.
In our last few moments, do you see one more debate doing a lot to move the needle in any direction at this point, Susan, given that a lot of votes have already been cast?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because early, you know, 2 months ago or 3 months ago when they were scheduling, when these debates had already been scheduled, the Trump campaign was kind of complaining that this last debate was too late anyway, because so many people will have voted. I think that at this point, most people have made up their minds, as I said. And so it's really mostly about getting your voters out. And so unless there's some major issue or concern that comes up at the debate, I don't necessarily see it moving the needle one way or the other.
Susan, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Always happy to do it, Rob.
That's Susan Johnson, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater. We talked to her today about the latest in the presidential campaign as we get closer and closer to Election Day and as voting continues here in Wisconsin and elsewhere in the country.